This is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Fraser Spears and I'm joined again by Bradley Chambers. This week we've got three sponsors for the show, the first being Jam Software, our friends who make enterprise tools that power widespread use of Apple technologies, Macs, iPads, iPhones, Apple TVs, all over education and other enterprise organizations. More about them at jamsoftware.com. And IDEV Books, a Finnish app design company that's been making iOS maths apps for 5 years now. And finally, this episode is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website, portfolio, and online store. For a free trial, 10% off, visit squarespace.com/out of school and enter the offer code PUPIL at checkout. A better web starts with your website. And this podcast. Bradley, how are you doing?
Happy Halloween.
Yes, indeed. It's the one day of the year where my dad takes his wife out to the cinema.
Yeah, it's, I guess when people are listening to this, it will not be Halloween, but it's Halloween when we're recording.
And yeah, so I'm going out dressed as the A5 processor.
That's terrifying. The scariest thing. If you showed up at a developer's house, that would be even more terrifying. You know, if you showed up at underscore David Smith's house, that would be even more terrifying. I'll have to mention that to him later. That'll be funny. So, yeah, it's been a while since we've talked. Mm-hmm. I am heading out this weekend to Nashville to speak a few times at the Tennessee Association of Independent Schools Conference. Okay. I am doing a presentation on an iPad deployment, mm-hmm, and taking the kind of the subtopics of our deployment series and presenting those in a speech form. I did that last week at another school, and I think it came off very well. Mm-hmm. And just because those points are really what you talk about, so it was kind of nice. Got a nice presentation plan with our logo in it. You know, of course, I always nice to promote the show while I'm there. Very also good. Doing a session on photo management, which is oddly enough has more signups than the iPad one. And then our friends from Kirby are in the States, and they are going to be presenting on Monday, and I'll be kind of co-presenting with them as well. And we had them on the past show. So that'll be fun to get to meet those guys actually, mm-hmm, in person.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff.
Yes.
I'm into report card season, so all I'm doing is marking things and writing reports at the moment. But that will soon be over, and we're on the rundown to Christmas. We've only been back a week, but it's the rundown to Christmas.
Yeah, it's hard to believe that the first 9 weeks is over. We did a report cards. I think I pushed them out on the 21st. But for me, it's a lot of database tasks where I'm choosing. Our first 9 weeks are the easiest because I'm only having to compute grades for one quarter. Mm-hmm. And so when we come back from Christmas break and I'm computing grades for quarter two and semester one, so you kind of have to repeat, mm-hmm, that process twice. Yeah. The way you have to run those database tasks in RenWeb. So, yeah, speaking of RenWeb, the lunch ordering portion of it went down for 3 days this week.
Oh, man.
And I about lost it on them. We were scheduled to be moving to a kind of a new backend. Now, RenWeb was purchased by a company called Fax a few months ago. It's a tuition management system who we actually use them already. And Fax already did the backend processing for RenWeb, and they were kind of upgrading it to include things like not taking 5 minutes to load and you could save your credit card, just like, mm-hmm, you know, modern 2014 features. It was supposed to be like, you know, sometime in November. Well, all of a sudden, like Monday, people could not place new lunch orders online and pay for them. It just didn't work. So I called, like, oh, we're working on it. And for me, when 2014, when products like that go down, you expect like minutes, maybe a few hours. Mm-hmm. It was down for 3 days. Obviously, they just figured out something bad was broken. They went ahead and moved us over to the new payment system, so we have those features now. But, somebody asked me one time, why don't we do tuition through RenWeb as well? And that's why. Because I can't have my single primary source of revenue for a school running through a system that can be down for 3 days.
Yeah, that's going to leave you vulnerable, isn't it?
It's pathetic. Yeah. I mean, I hate to say that, but it is. I mean, it's a company that is one of the larger student information system companies in the country, and if not the world, have a piece of their financial part go down for 3 days. It shouldn't be down for 3 hours, let alone 3 days.
It's almost like software written and sold to schools is just not very good.
No, it's not. And the problem is, too, is I'm sure those companies spend so much time trying to get there's so much upfront cost when you're building a product like that,
yeah,
that you kind of have to build it quickly and cheaply and then just try to make profits off signing people up. And, mm-hmm, there's never a good time to redo things. And the fact that it's like you know, outsourcing the payment piece to another company that's loading inline and inline frame. It's like, who comes up with this stuff like this? But it's back up, and so crisis is averted. I kind of let our parents know. Well, and the reason it was such a big deal for us is because we do the majority of our lunch orders during the last week of the month for the next month. Like, parents would go ahead and like pre-order everything their kids are going to do, so they make like just one payment, which is great for us because it limits the transaction fees. Well, this happened the last week of October, and I was sitting on November's menu.
So it was a critical time of the month as well.
It couldn't have been a worse time.
Yeah.
But we're back up.
Oh, that's a stressful time. We've been having internet up and down situations again in the school. And our service provider, Virgin Media, you know, this. Well, firstly, I phoned them up and they said, no, you're a residential customer. I'm like, I'm really not a residential customer. You know, I was like, have you ever had a fault in this line before? Yes, about 25 over the course of a couple of years. So eventually, it was funny, an engineer came out to the school today and he's like, oh, I've logged in remotely to your modem and everything's fine, and gave me this cock and bull story about power levels on the network and stuff like that and how they can fluctuate, and it's just your problem if it happens not to be within tolerances for your modem. So he leaves the school, and then not having only shut the door 2 seconds on him when the whole internet just goes out again. So I'm on the phone to him, I'm like, you've just left and the whole thing's just gone down again. So fortunately he came back and he was able to observe it in the down state and figure out what was going on. But then I just realized just as I was leaving school today for the weekend that it was off again. So We'll be talking to them again on Monday, but it's that's the only single point of failure that remains is that internet connection.
Yeah, that's going to be frustrating. I think we've had maybe one outage that wasn't power related in the past 5 years, and that was because a tree pulled our fiber out of the building.
Yeah, well,
it fell, and
that can be understood.
Yeah, and so we've not had any kind of just bad equipment. Something wrong at the head end, outages in 5 years. And it's something, honestly, I take for granted at this point. You know, when you say, it's like I'm having to fight with them on the phone, I don't have to do that. I mean, and that's nice, and it saves me time. And it just kind of puts people, it gives people confidence in your network when it stays up.
Yeah, it is frustrating. It's actually been quite good for a while now. I mean, we've talked in past shows, we had a terrible period with it, 6 months. It was just completely inconsistently working and not working, but it's been good for a while now. But this is the first time we had a massive kind of flooding, rainstorm and flooding on Tuesday, and it seems to have somehow affected it. Although I don't really take for granted the explanations they give me about, oh, there's power in the network and blah blah blah. I think it may be more straightforward than that the cable modems that they hand out for these services are just a bit crappy, and they're not keen to change them for you.
Yes, that's probably modems. I'm thankful we don't have to deal with that.
Yeah.
But so before we move on, let's thank our first sponsor of the day, the fine folks at Jamf Software. They make great enterprise tools that power widespread use of Apple technology, such as Macs, iPads, iPhones, and Apple TVs in education organizations. They have a great app called Casper Focus that allows teachers from their iPad to take control of their classroom, do things like distribute iBooks. They can initiate AirPlay, they can conduct secure exams within an app, and they can quickly gain their students' attention. It's a great, great app. If you want to learn more about Jamf Software and what they can do for you on iOS and on the Mac, go to outofschool.net, and we've got a special link that lets them know that you came to them from our show. So thanks to Jamf for sponsoring the show this week. So, you know, before we move on, you know, you and I have not talked in the past few weeks, and so we've got some things we're going to talk about specifically with the iPad, and we're kind of calling this episode the iPad Buyer's Guide of 2015. Mm-hmm. But I've used Apple Pay a few times this week. I used it last Saturday at Panera Bread, and I actually bought an iPad Air 2 for a coworker I'm picking up in Nashville, using Apple Pay.
Wow.
And, you know, when I heard of Apple Pay, I'd never once thought about the possibility of how we could use it in schools. And I'm really kind of becoming more intrigued with it. You know, things like our concession stands for athletic events, school stores, lunch. And then I'm even brainstorming, like, could we somehow tie iBeacons into that? Maybe where, you know, let's say you could integrate iBeacon with Apple Pay and, like, charge students for athletic tickets. Like, hey, you showed up at the basketball game, we've dinged your account $5. So just very, very intrigued at this point with Apple Pay.
Yeah, I think it's still kind of early days, and I think that a lot of the, like, for example, at the moment, you can't obviously just walk past an iBeacon and get charged money, because then folk would just be walking about with iBeacons everywhere and dipping money at your phone. But I think over time, obviously, there's a lot of pressure from the retail sector to do things with iBeacon, and obviously Apple Pay is, you know, there's been some controversy over it in the first couple of weeks, but none of which is really to do with Apple as much as to do with other retailers' attitude to Apple Pay. But I think what's kind of interesting about it from a school point of view is that if all you have to do is basically get set up to be a vendor with NFC payments, and then you can use Apple Pay. It's apparently completely transparent. I mean, there were stories about people who had traveled from the US to other countries where NFC terminals are more common and were able to use Apple Pay abroad. So it's mostly just about getting the bank signed up to it and so on, rather than it's more about having the card in the system, I think, rather than having the terminals in place. So if you just had NFC terminals, you should be able to do the job.
Way of the future, it seems.
I know, we don't have it yet. And, you know, we've got these chip and pin cards, and we've got contactless. I've got an NFC card in my pocket right now, and I've had it for 2 or 3 years. But it's just a matter of joining the dots, I suppose, to get it up and running in the UK. And yeah, I mean, I certainly look forward to it. That's going to be pretty nice.
So last thing we had before we kind of got into today's topic was, what the heck is wrong with iCloud Drive?
I don't know, but something is not right with it. What are you seeing?
Keynote. I had major issues with it when I was presenting last week. It was very slow. Mm-hmm. And I like and that's on my iPad. Keynote on my phone just refuses to download anything for my it just doesn't launch. Like, it's showing the iCloud Drive state of like a month ago.
Oh man!
And I've deleted the app, reinstalled it. Same thing.
Yep. I'm seeing similar things. There's apparently a bug in a certain API in iOS 8 which involves, my understanding is it's an API that you sort of ask iCloud, are you available to store data? Yes or no. And that API seems to be hanging up a lot of applications. So I'm seeing iPages and Keynote and presumably Numbers, though I haven't really used it yet, stalling on launch, being forcibly quit by the system's software on launch, and certain other applications also use iCloud, such as Day One. I'm syncing my Day One journal through iCloud, and that's struggling to be fast at all. I'm also noticing, I don't know if you're using iCloud Photo Library, I'm using it, and I'm noticing that it's taking a very long time for the multiple parts of that system to come into synchronization. So my phone will be, what I saw last week was my iPad was waiting to download 3 photos for hours on end, and it would never actually finish that process. And the phone would struggle to upload a couple of photos at a time. So it's difficult always around. And it's not clear to me what exactly is going on there, whether or not is there a problem with some unsatisfied download blocking the whole thing and you restart the phone, because I noticed that if I restarted the phone it would upload a couple of photos and then stop again and so on. So there's definitely some teething problems there, more than teething problems, but yeah.
My big frustration with this is this is not 2008.
Yeah.
This is not 2009. This is not 2010. I mean, when's the last time you had an issue with an app not working correctly with Dropbox on their API?
Pretty rare.
Yeah. And so at this, and again, I guess this could be an iOS 8 bug, mm-hmm. but these are the kind of things that make, you know, when I'm presented with an app option syncing, it says, do you want to use Dropbox or iCloud? It's always like, iCloud may be like one switch mm-hmm. and it's nice and it works. Most of the time with Dropbox, it's just going to launch the app and I'm going to allow it. So it's like one extra second.
Yeah.
And it generally works better. And that's a huge issue for Apple.
It is. And I think that the tricky part about this is that it might not be an iOS 8 bug at all. It might be a fault in the server software. And this is one of the frustrations of iOS, is there's essentially no way to even begin to learn whether or not it's your fault or not. Do you know what I mean? There's nothing you can even really inspect. All you can see is a number that's not going down or going up, or a progress bar that's not completing, and then what do? You just try and restart your device over and over again. So it's, yeah, the reliability of a lot of this stuff is really starting to get pretty painful now.
The guy that makes drafts, Greg Pierce, mm-hmm. at Agile Tortoise on Twitter, he referenced a little while ago that he restored an iCloud set up as new, didn't restore from backup, and it seems to not be having that issue. And again, these are the kind of things that we just cannot be having to do at this point. And I don't know if this is like a symptom of trying to do too much with this release, or it's just got to be better. And I expect better. They have too much money for it not to be better.
They have too much money, that's for sure. I mean, it's not a problem of being able to afford to hire people. It's possibly a problem of not being able to hire people. Because, you know, if you want to go and work for Apple, you have to, you know, let's say you were an amazing server-side software specialist and you lived in, let's say, Japan, right? If you wanted to go and work for Apple, you have to be willing to emigrate to the United States and then go and live in Silicon Valley and then work for Apple. And it's not clear to me that, like, Apple has a lot of employees now, and the big companies in Silicon Valley do have a lot of employees, but it's increasingly, you know, I'm not saying I'm necessarily worthy to go and work for Apple and work on code, but the offer that I would be given to go and work there, you know, it's not, I don't know what I'm trying to say. There's good people out there who would want to work for Apple who don't want to live in California and move to America, right? And Apple is at the moment got a policy of not hiring any of those people, because the whole thing is all the software is in Cupertino. And I think that the time has possibly come where that has to open up a little bit more. And it's not just that, you know, it should be done in other countries, but it's also that if you think about it, if you have development going on in different parts of the world, you've got 24 hours of development in every day. Whereas in California, if everybody's in one time zone, you in any one 24-hour span of daytime, you only get, what, 8 or 9, 10 hours of development done. You know, so that's another way that things can move faster, is if you do it around the clock, around the world, you see? And it's not just about, I don't want to move to California, or people don't want to move to California, but it enables more things to happen faster as well.
Yeah, I would like to. I would work for Apple if I didn't have to move. I'm not moving to California. It would have to be changing the family tree amount of money, because I like my lifestyle where I'm at.
Yeah, and you're not going to walk in at vice president level at Apple.
Exactly.
Nobody is, of course. You know.
So before we move on, let's think iDevBooks. It's a Finnish app design company. They've been with us for the past few weeks. They make iOS apps and have been for the past 5 years. They have 26 math apps ranging from column addition to polynomial long division. When EduDemic selected iDevBooks among the 20 best education apps and web tools of the year, they stated that the apps were focused on making the concepts easy to learn rather than being bogged down with bells and whistles and ads. If you're a listener of this podcast, which if you're listening to this, you are, you can get a free app from them by using their feedback form at idevbooks.com and just let them know you heard about the offer on Out of School and let them know which app you want. This offer is good through the end of the year, but hurry because they only have a limited number of coupon codes. So again, go to idevbooks.com, go to the feedback form, say, hey, I want this app for free, and I heard about you guys on Out of School, and they'll send that right over. Your email address will not be added to a newsletter. It'll just be a one-time thing to send you the coupon code. So thanks to iDevBooks for sponsoring the show this week. So the week of the iPad announcement, I was at Disney World, and then last week I got no idea where you were. You were somewhere, and so we've not talked about the announcement. You know, on the show, I messaged about it. You know, obviously, Ton and I was, as I listened to the show with you and Andrew, I'm messaging you my thoughts. But so we thought we would, you know, talk about this. And so since then, I have purchased the Generation 2 iPad Mini. I have a 32 gigabyte iPad Mini now that I paid $329 for on the education store.
Okay.
And do you have your new iPad yet?
Yep. So I had a 128 gig cellular iPad Air, and I sold that and bought basically the exact same model in iPad Air 2 form. So it's the same. It's white, 128 gig cellular iPad Air, and I have it here in front of me right now. Yep.
So I guess will you be editing the show on that this week, or are you going to use Adobe Audition?
I'm sticking with Audition this time. I just didn't quite get time to set up everything that I wanted on the iPad, so I'm using it for notes right now.
So we've got the iPad Air 2, we've got the iPad Air, we've got the iPad Mini 3, the iPad Mini 2, the iPad Mini 1.
There's a lot of different iPads. Yeah.
So clearly this iPad Air 2 is a beast. And I know you, since you just gotten yours, you've kind of gotten not even. It'd be interesting to talk to you in a month and see how big the beast it is, because we've seen from the specs that it actually is probably overkill for what iOS 8 can do. Yeah. So the question is it overkill for schools?
Well, I mean, let me give you my kind of impression of this device. I've only had it a couple of days. What is this, Friday? And I got it on Wednesday. It's, to me, it's noticeably faster than the iPad Air, but not in a way that most people would notice. Like, I know how long it took to, say, open a new tab in Safari and load a certain web page. And on the iPad Air, it's certainly faster than that. But even with my iPad Air, on the Air 2, even with my iPad Air, I didn't always even have the opportunity to really do a CPU-bound operation, right? And what I mean by that is, you know, you see it when you see progress bars in iOS. Things like, I've been editing something in iMovie and I render it and save it in the Photos app. That can take some time, right? If you're using like a third or fourth generation iPad, that can be a slow process. And it's substantially quicker even than the iPad Air to do things like that. But it's not every day you do those tasks on iPad. So for most tasks, most of the time, it's sort of about the same or a wee bit faster in the way that only somebody who really uses iOS would notice over just the last generation. But see, when I compare it to the performance of what the kids in school have got, which is the fourth generation iPad with Retina display, it's noticeably a massive jump over the device from 2 years ago. And I think that's really the way that the iPad line is sort of settling down at the high end is, it's now not about upgrading to every model. It's about upgrading to every other model or maybe even three models ahead. You know, so anybody, I've got a lot of people I know who are still running iPad 2 and they're starting to look at the new iPad Air and they're going, yeah, that would be a pretty serious upgrade for me if I went from this iPad 2 to that. And I think that's what you'll start to see more people doing is now, like, not the early adopters have obviously upgraded a couple of times, but the people who are kind of the middle majority, late majority people, they're starting to think, well, maybe I should upgrade my iPad now to one of these newer models that are substantially better than the ones before.
It seems like, you know, I have a 2012 MacBook Air that I know that the 2014 MacBook Air is certainly faster and has better specs, has 11AC, wireless, certainly a better computer. I'm very much content with my current MacBook Air. 99% of the time, it does exactly what I need in a perfect amount of time. Yeah. Occasionally, if I'm rendering video, it's a little slower, but I don't do that. I don't do that every day.
Yeah.
And so, I guess the question I'm running through my head is, have we gotten to the iPad in really in a quick amount of time where it's no longer these like dramatic performance gains that everybody would notice? Where going from the iPhone 4S to 5, the 5 to 5S, the 5S to 6, I really felt, you know, in some ways, I almost wish I could have used an iPhone 6 heart's performance with the smaller size and really see if I could be able to tell. Like, are we slowing down on what the regular people can notice in terms of performance gains? Just as, you know, again, the computers of 2014 are certainly faster than computers of 2012, 2011, but is it something that the average person would notice day to day?
Yeah, I think we've actually been there for some time with iPad. You know, I think even since the iPad 2, it's been difficult for most people to perceive enough of a difference that it was worth going to every new model. Now, people move up for reasons of necessity sometimes, but I think that it's also the case, I think, Bradley, that people who are kind of stuck in the iPad 1, iPad 2 world, they sort of think of the iPad as a slow computer still, and they don't expect to do these things that I do in my iPad much faster. And I think it's only people who have got much faster devices now that people that you and I think of the iPad as a pretty fast computer, actually, for many, many tasks. And I think people's eyes haven't necessarily been opened yet to just how capable the hardware is. And I think you're right, and this is the interesting question, is that the hardware is actually more capable than the software. Even though iOS 8, bugs aside, has gotten much more powerful, I think it's still, people haven't really rethought the number of things that you could do with an iPad. And I don't blame people for that, because I think Apple has, to some extent, stopped telling people what is possible. You know, they show videos with little passing glimpses of people doing things on their iPad. But I think a sustained program of telling people, look, you can edit a whole movie on your iPad, you know, or you can write a whole song on your iPad, or you can create documents, or you can edit photographs on your iPad. You know, these are all the things that I do routinely now that I, in times past, I wouldn't necessarily have thought that the iPad was the device for doing that kind of stuff on.
Apple seems to be in the business of showing us, A, people doing tasks that the regular people will never do, mm-hmm. and B, doing things with the iPad that previously they didn't use computers for.
So it's computers going to new places rather than replacing existing computer tasks.
Exactly. And that's fine to an extent, because I firmly believe that's one of the benefits of the tablet form factor. Mm-hmm. You know, using it on the go, using it in the field, a place where you didn't have a laptop. But they should do a better job about like showing you regular people doing regular tasks with this device. But I guess the question is, do they want regular people to think of the iPad as a laptop replacement?
Hmm. It's interesting. I don't think we're quite there yet, for many reasons. And maybe a very charitable interpretation of that would be that Apple is waiting for the software to be better before making that claim. Because I don't know how many people you know, Bradley, who are iPad only. I only know a couple of people who are like that, and I'm not even there yet. But like I wrote in my blog recently, it's the kind of thing that like some people can go iPad only as long as they have friends who've got a computer, right? Who can help them out in a pinch, like download all their photos when the iPad gets full or whatever. And I think we're still a couple of generations of iOS away from really being able to run an iPad completely on its own. I mean, I know technically it can be a standalone computer, but in terms of taking on most people's, or not even most, but let's say 35%, the lowest 35% of tasks that a Mac is used for could all move over to iPad. That's probably almost possible, but it's the kind of day-to-day living with it that's the difficult part. You know, you get it full of video. How do you download all that stuff? Well, either you sit and tediously upload it to a cloud service, or you plug it into Mac and download it over image capture. And I think in the next couple of years, I think we'll see more capabilities come to iPad, because I thought the feeling I got, you know, when at the iPad keynote was really that Apple is looking at all of these products as one sort of continuous spectrum of devices, from very, very small with the watch through pocket-sized, bag-sized, you know, larger bag-sized laptops and then desktop computers. And I got the sense, and Tim Cook sort of said at the end, you know, whatever, you don't have to have them all, but whatever ones you have will make them work together really well. And I think that that made me feel very optimistic, because, you know, we had that whole thing about, you know, when the 30th anniversary of the Mac interview came out, and we were all like, oh, is this going to be, you're always going to have a Mac. I got the sense that that's no longer really... That's not what they meant, even if that's maybe what they actually technically said. I feel like we're still a couple of generations away from iOS really being able to live forever on its own, if you know what I mean by that. But eventually, you know, if I want to be an iPad and an iPhone guy with a watch on, and I don't want to have a desktop computer, I mean, that's been possible for a while, but even if I don't want to have a Mac of any kind, iOS should be able to take most of my needs. And it's increasingly getting that way, but it's not quite there yet. And the day will come, I think. But I think Apple needs to say a wee bit more to customers about, here's why you might want this.
Well, I'm thinking about the article you wrote a few weeks ago. It said you could ditch your Mac at home just as the way the guy ditches his car can do it, because he knows his friends can take him around. And you know, yeah, you can have access to a Mac at school.
Yeah, I think that's the case, you know. And I feel like, if there's one thing that I really need to get better on iPad for personally, is the Google Docs apps need to get better. Because they're okay right now, but they're not as powerful, and they're not feature complete with the web version yet. And I think I'm certainly hoping that will come along. But I also am aware, Bradley, that with iOS 8 coming along, I don't know how you feel about this, but I have not unlearned the previous way of working with iOS yet. I mean, you and I have been very ingrained in using iOS since the iPhone first came out. And we're used to doing things a certain way. We're used to using things like OpenIn. We're used to putting things onto Dropbox. We're used to, you know, downloading things from Dropbox, syncing through Dropbox. And I feel like with the extension stuff, I'm only just starting to learn the new workflows that are now possible, and it's taking me a while. And I don't blame other people for thinking, well, iOS 8 is not really any different from iOS 7, but it's really different. And it's also taken developers a little bit of time to see where are the best places to hook into the system to make the workflows flow correctly for the user. And that's going to take a lot of time.
And I still firmly believe that until Mobile Safari can upload documents to websites from iCloud Drive, the iPad is stuck.
I agree. Yeah, we said that before in the show. I think that's one of the things that is, the web is in some ways kind of holding it back a little bit. And sure, you can get apps for a lot of things, and most of those apps are better than the equivalent website. But I think there's always going to be something that you're not using by choice, right? For most of those things, like if I want to book a hotel, either I can go on the web and I can, you know, browse a number of hotel booking sites, and then I choose the one that works best on my iPad. That's fine. But then there's plenty of things where people are compelled to use one specific service, and it may or may not be iPad friendly. And that's your problem if it's not, right? And I think that kind of thing has to get ironed out a little bit as well.
We did see the storage kind of change a little bit. It's now 16, 64, 128. You know, I made the joke while I was going to Disney on Twitter that the storage sizes in 2025 would be 16 gigs, 5 terabytes, and 10 terabytes, which were literally retweeted almost 1,000 times. I had to turn off retweets. And it's that, to me, felt like a money grab.
Yeah, I mean, it used to be Apple was always good, better, best in their configurations, and now it's sucks. Pretty awesome, really awesome.
Well, and I think Marco Arment really said it well in his blog when he said, when it used to be when people were like, you didn't have to kind of like preface which iPhone or iPad to buy to them. And now you're like, please don't buy the iPhone 5C 8 gigabyte. Please don't buy the 16 gig iPhone or the iPad. Just please upgrade to the, just get at least the one step up in storage. And yeah, that's sad because that's not good for customer sat, I guess, as Tim would say. And I know that, like, my wife's new iPad, she got 16 gig. She said, I just won't use it. I just won't use it. I just won't use it. Mm. But when she does use it, it'll make her sad.
You're basically going to buy a new iPad at that point.
Exactly. Yeah. There is no ability to add storage after the fact. There is no SD card slot. I'm not asking for that. But I'm not saying that 64 should have been the default. But I think 32 would have been fine. Mm-hmm. Again, even do 32, 128, 256. I could deal with that.
Yeah, I mean, that's maybe next year's line. You know, 16 will go up double, but then we'll all be way beyond that, you know. It's a pain, and I don't know why they're doing that. And maybe it's just that they had to decide that a long time ago, and they can change it again. But it does feel like a misstep. Because there's now a tier of products which are just simply not good for anyone to buy. And it's not just that there's an iPad for basic users and then there's an iPad for power users. It's my conviction, and I believe it's yours too, Bradley, and I think it's correct, that for almost anybody who will spend time on their iPad for anything but watching Netflix, that is not a good device to buy.
My wife has minimal apps and has 5 gigs free.
Yep.
So, we did see a better camera and better screen.
Well, can I just say the screen is amazing, right? I've complained before on this show about how reflective the iPad screen can be, and this iPad Air 2 doesn't completely eliminate the problem, but it makes it massively better, right? And just give me a couple of scenarios where that's the case. Where I sit at work, my desk is directly under a strip light hanging above my desk. And if I put my iPad down to type on there in the kind of low position typing stand, I can still see the reflection of that light in the screen. So if you have direct overhead lighting, it's still not ideal, but it looks more purplish than bright white. So it's more usable. But where the big win comes is in moderately lit rooms or bright rooms where you don't have direct light onto the screen. Now, in most situations with the previous iPad or even with the iPhone, you could see your reflection in the screen, whereas with the iPad Air, that reflection is very difficult to discern in a moderately lit room without direct light. And that is, to me, that's the big win, is that it's not previously, if I wanted to, say, watch a movie on my iPad when I'm sitting in the living room, I would actually go and turn the lights right down or off to eliminate that reflection, particularly if I'm watching a kind of dark movie, some sort of Batman movie or something. Whereas now, you can leave the light on fine and the iPad will take care of it. So I'm a real big fan of the screen, and I think that was one of the reasons why I wanted to upgrade from the Air to the Air 2, was because of the screen, because it's something I've found problematic in the past with iPads.
Well, and you were talking about working out in the field with it. That'll be a dramatic enhancement. You're someone that works in direct sunlight all day.
Mm-hmm. Or even indirect sunlight. You know, I think that's because not every country in the world has the same amount of beautiful sunshine as California does. We don't get a lot of direct sunlight in Scotland. We get a lot of diffuse, bright but diffuse light coming through clouds. And in that situation, the screen is much more readable than any previous generation. And I think it's a much bigger improvement than at first it seems. They always say, oh, better screen. But in fact, this is really, it's a real noticeable difference side by side. It's great.
And we did see 11AC, added to 11AC was added. And that will be a nice enhancement to schools as they do roll out the new wireless standards, because it's not just about faster speeds. It's also the ability to manage congestion better.
Yes.
And so that'll be very, very helpful. This episode is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website, portfolio, and online store. For a free trial and 10% off, visit squarespace.com/outofschool and enter the offer code PUPIL, P-U-P-I-L, at checkout, and you'll get 10% off. Now, if you pay annually, you'll also get a free domain name as well. Now, they've got a great new version 7 that's a back-end change. It doesn't really affect your front-end, but you can actually go and migrate your site to it and use it. It's absolutely wonderful. It's taking everything about version 6 and building upon it. Now, Squarespace is scalable. If you've got a one-page website for your club, up to a huge site with e-commerce. It is, again, it can do anything you want. You don't have to worry about hosting. You just pay them one time for their software, their hosting. You sign up, and you're good to go. No reason to rent a server somewhere. Again, I recommend paying by the year. You get a little bit cheaper of a price, and free domain name included. It's worth $10. All plans include e-commerce. They have a great blog that you can use to blog from your iPad or your iPhone, and they have 24/7 support via email. It's absolutely fantastic. It's fast, and their employees are very knowledgeable. So again, thanks to Squarespace for sponsoring Out of School this week, and use the offer code PUPIL at checkout. So iPad Air 2, we've discussed that. Where does that leave the iPad Air?
You know, it's interesting because I think that the iPad Air, I was not in any way really unhappy with my iPad Air. I thought it was a great device. It was working great. It was doing all the things it needed to do, and it was pretty fast. So I look at the iPad Air as being a pretty good value device for schools right now. And if I was signing a lease right now, which most schools won't be doing it at the beginning of November, but if I had to take a pick right now, I would say the iPad Air looks like a great value device. And interestingly, just with the way that the storage configurations work, Bradley, the iPad Air is the only full-size iPad that comes in 32 gigabytes now. So if you want to go Air 2, you've got to go 64. Okay, so the 64 gig Air 2 in Wi-Fi is $600, whereas the 32 gig Air is $449. So there's a good saving to be made. And I think for most schools right now, a 32 gig model is pretty good. Right? 64 is obviously better, but I don't know that there are that many people. I certainly don't see it in our school where we're crying out for people to get 64 gig iPads. I think we were certainly crying out for people to get 32s in the past, and we've got 32 in this lease, and I'm very happy with it. But a 32 gig Wi-Fi iPad Air would be a great, great device to buy for a school, I think.
Well, and you figure let's say you're buying 500 devices, at $150 difference in price, you save $75,000.
Yep, and what do you lose for that? Okay, the camera is probably the one thing that I think is the real loss to a school, because the new camera is a good bit better on the iPad Air 2, but the iPad Air wasn't that bad.
You can buy some nice Nikons with $75,000.
It's a lot of money for slightly better cameras.
Slightly better camera, Touch ID, 11AC, and the better screen. Again, those are all nice, And personally, if I'm buying an iPad, a full-size iPad today, I'm buying the iPad Air 2.
Yeah.
But, you know, you make decisions when you're buying in bulk like this. If you can save $10, $20 here and there over these big bulk purchases, that certainly does add up.
Sure does.
I'm the same as you. I would feel comfortable signing a lease today for an iPad Air that I know I would use it for 3 years.
Yeah.
I really would, because I think towards the end of it, I think your battery wearing out is going to affect you more than the processor getting slow or the lack of 2 gigs of RAM hurting you. Now I say that, and you and I have said this, there has to be something more coming software-wise with iOS in our minds, because the software is so powerful, the hardware is so powerful. Mm-hmm. And so if we come to March and the iPad Pro is out, mm-hmm. and then it really opens up what iOS can do. But the only devices that can use these new software features, they're in 8.2, or mm-hmm. the iPad Air 2 and the iPad Pro, well, then it's possibly a different discussion, because then you are talking about drastic workflow differences.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing that would change my advice on that right now, is if something came out that was iPad Air 2 and above only. But that may be a couple of years away, possibly. You know, let's say iOS 9 was the release that brought a lot of those, you know, new workflow features, like possibly two up apps or whatever, multiple apps at once or something. I think perhaps the reason for putting the additional hardware power in the iPad Air 2 is so that when that software feature launches, there will be enough devices in the field that are capable of doing that stuff that people can try them out and see it in action without having to go straight out and buy this mythical iPad Pro that people keep talking about with the bigger screen. So I think that, you know, if I was buying for school right now, I would still be leaning towards a full-size iPad, but I don't see the iPad Air as being sufficient value over the iPad Air 2 as being sufficient value over the iPad Air that I would necessarily go straight for the top of the line anymore, unless I really had a good reason why I knew that I needed 64 gigs of storage on my device. Because for the next few years, I think, at least for the time that you're going to be leasing a device, the iPad Air is going to be a pretty solid machine. I don't think it's going to get left behind. I mean, we're seeing that already, that even iOS 7, iOS 8, they all run back to an iPad 2, right? So it's less and less the case that the iPad is getting cut off by software updates. So there's broad support for those things. And of course, they're still selling the A5-based iPad Mini 1. And we've called that before a boat anchor on the platform. And I don't think that's necessarily a wrong thing to say, because if Apple are still selling A5-based iPads today, then next year, are they really going to cut it off at the knees? They might, but I think there'd be a lot of pretty unhappy iPad users if they did that in 1 year.
I think you've got minimum 2 years from when they stop selling it that you can kind of can expect support for it.
Yeah, from when they stop selling it. Yeah,
if not three, and we're probably going to have it. I'll save the iPad Mini 1 discussion. We'll work our way down the line. Yeah. iPad Mini 3, I agree with you. There is zero reason for a school to buy this, because you are literally paying, and you know, not even just $100 for Touch ID, but you know, the fact that, you know, like, let me go back to the 32 argument. I bought a 32 gig iPad Mini 2 for $329 through the education. So that's my education discount. And mm-hmm. possibly if you're buying in bulk, you might even get it for, let's say,
$325. Yeah.
You know, on the iPad Mini 3 to go up the storage bump, you go to 64. So you're literally paying, I saved $170 getting the iPad Mini 2. Now, I only got 32 versus 64, but 32 was fine for me. I was mm-hmm. fine with that. And I didn't get Touch ID.
Yeah.
And so I don't see a reason in the world that a school would deploy the iPad Mini 3 at this point, because it's the same processor. I mean, it didn't even get 11AC.
Yeah, it's basically all the same internals plus Touch ID, right? And for that, you know, is Touch ID worth $100 times the number of devices you're going to deploy? Probably not. In fact, it's probably more hassle than it's worth for schools at this point to deploy Touch ID and get that sorted out. So, yeah, I'm looking the same way you are, Bradley, that the iPad Mini 2 seems like a really compelling purchase for schools that want to go down the Mini line rather than the Mini 3. And the same with the Air versus the Air 2, that those last year's models are actually, they're already better value, than they were last year, and they're as long-lasting. All the longevity arguments for the iPad Air also apply to the Mini 2, I think, because it's essentially the same device as the iPad Air inside.
And since it's a year older, Apple's kind of getting their margins a little bit better on it, I'm sure. They may have more room to negotiate on price, since you're not buying kind of the top of the line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's possible, too.
You know, one of the things I read about the iPad Air 2 was, I don't know if you read, or no, I'm sorry, the iPad Mini 3, the screen is very difficult to repair because the way the Touch ID is installed, it's like some sort of glue that it's adhered. It's very difficult to repair the screen on the Mini 3.
Yeah.
So to wrap up that the line is, we're talking about the iPad Mini 1 that you can get at retail at $249. So I expect this Christmas to see that at $219 in stores. And this device has very little value, I think, for most people.
I would agree. Yep. It has a certain amount of value as, essentially, a slightly nicer Kindle Fire. You know, if you want to, even book reading, because it's not a Retina display, is probably not that great. But if you want to watch, you know, Amazon Instant Video or Netflix on that device, that's a pretty great. You know, I think what is happening there is that Apple's trying to play with the Chinese manufacturers who are basically selling little portable televisions to people, and they're called tablets, but they're actually being used 99% of the time as a portable television. And if that's what you want out of an iPad, the iPad Mini 1 is a very, very cheap way to get that. But it's only available in 16 gigabytes, so you better be into your streaming and have a good network connection. Because it's not, it obviously doesn't have a lot of storage, and it's A5 based. So it's not a powerful machine in any sense, but it is a screen that will play streaming video for you. And for that, it's probably pretty decent machine to buy for not very much money. And of course, you can, if you spend that little money, you can probably afford to replace it sooner than if you bought, you know, a £600 iPad Air 2.
And I'm not saying there's no value to it, because I could see in a kiosk type situation that being great. You know, we use iPads for our time clocks. We are using the iPad 2.
Yep.
You know, it's possible, like, if we need another one, I would just say, hey, let's get the iPad. There's no iPad Mini. I don't care. I mean, it's literally, the only thing it does is it's locked via guided access to a website. That's literally all it does. It's a time clock. Well, that would be fine. The only thing I could think of it being okay inside a classroom is if it was like almost like a, like in your lower school, like a center. Like if it, all its job was is to, let's say you had, like, I know in my son's K-3 class, they have a listening center that they actually have CDs and they listen along with the book. If you had those books like loaded on the iPad and they listened to them while they read a physical book, like I could see where they have very specific applications. Like, we use this iPad for this one or two purposes. We don't do much else on it at all. This is what it's good for.
It feels a wee bit like the iPad Mini 1 might continue to exist so that IBM can sell it to businesses who want to do exactly that. They want to put a single SaaS app on it, and they want to just give it to their people in the field, and that's it, right? No, the people buying it don't care whether it's fast or not, because they're not going to use it. It's these poor schmucks who do the job who are going to use this device, and we want it as cheap as possible, right? It's got that whiff of, like, you walk into your bank and it's kind of like the iPad version of the PC you see sitting on the bank desk, where it's old and it's slow, but who cares, right? Because it's just the counter staff dealing with it. I wouldn't be surprised if IBM move a lot of iPad Mini 1 into businesses.
Well, and you get the benefits of a cheap tablet, but also you get the control of iOS, you get the MDM capabilities, you get the security.
Yeah,
but it's also cheap. And I'm sure if you bought enough of those, you could probably get it for $199 from Apple.
Mm-hmm.
If you're buying, you know, 50,000 of them. So I just don't, you know, it would make me sad to hear of a school that was doing a large one-to-one deployment with the original iPad Mini, because you know it's just a cost thing. It's just getting the cost down as low as possible. And I get it, because as we just ran the numbers, $100 can matter a lot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, going from an iPad 1 to iPad Mini with Retina is such a dramatic bump in performance.
Yep.
It is worth the money.
Yeah. That's one that's genuinely worth the money. And there's steps up in the iPad line that for a school is not worth the money. like going up to the iPad Mini 3 or probably even going to the iPad Air 2 is probably not worth what it costs to in a large-scale deployment. It may be worth it to individuals. I mean, I found it was worth it to me to sell my iPad Air and go to the iPad Air 2. I'm very happy I've done that. But multiply that by 500 or 1,000, do you get that much value? No, you don't. So I'm kind of thinking the same way you are, Bradley, that the middle of the line for both of these devices is probably the right way to go. The iPad Mini 2 and the iPad Air from last year, great devices that will last the full duration of any lease that you sign right now, I'm pretty sure of it.
Unless it's a six-year lease, and then you're a fool.
Yes, well, if you're doing the sort of 100-year lease that you get on, you know, a football stadium or something, it's not going to last that long. But in the normal timescale of what we expect a computer to survive, I really believe that the A7 is going to be a pretty capable processor for all of that time.
So, yeah, so that is our iPad Mini buyer's guide for 2015. So there's no perfect, it's kind of getting confusing. There's no perfect device. It's going to largely depend on what you need and largely your budget. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you've got the money and you've got a huge grant that says, get the nicest iPad you can get the nicest iPad because it's nicer. But yeah. When you are constrained budget wise, it's about understanding where you can cut corners on maybe not having this feature or maybe not having that much storage.
Yeah, because I mean, think about it this way. In our school, we're still using the fourth generation iPad, which is an A6 based device, and it's working just fine for our kids. You know, nobody's walking up to me going, "Mr. Spears, my iPad is so slow," except for the people who are waiting for iCloud Drive to respond to their API requests. But maybe next year it'll be a different story. But I think that even with an A6 based device, it's okay right now. You know, we've only got another year and a half to run on that lease. So we'll soon be moving up to A7 or A8, depending on what Apple does with the next major refresh of iPad. And that'll be a nice bump, but it won't change the game for us in the way that moving from iPad 1 to A6 did. That was a huge step up in performance. And people were complaining about the performance of the iPad 1 towards the end of the first lease. But I'm not hearing any real grumbles about it right now, which is great. Yeah. And this is a question I asked myself, Bradley, and I don't know if you thought this either. Is it now feasible to go for a more than 3-year lease on an iPad?
I don't know, because I don't know that we've... Well, I want to see when the iPad 2 starts getting cut off, like the mm-hmm. iPad 2 and 3.
Yep.
And it largely will depend on the size of the lease and how much it saves you on the lease payments.
Yeah. So,
but, I mean, 4 years would be... 4 years, I think, would be nice, because then you could say, especially for like a high school, you could say, okay, you get this iPad your freshman year, mm-hmm. but then you'll have it to your senior. But I guess my big concern is what's the battery life going to be by their senior year when they probably need it the most.
Yeah. Yeah. That is a possibility. I haven't really detected much problem with battery life in our experience of deploying iOS, not even with the iPad 1. We still found that our iPad 1s were... As long as people charge them properly at night, they were doing a full day at school, even towards the end of that lease. And I've certainly not had many complaints with the iPad 4 either. I don't have evidence to be concerned about that, but I do know, how the chemistry of batteries works and that they do age over time. So the question is, going into the fourth year, how will they survive? And that is an open question.
You start rolling out portable battery packs to every
desk. Yeah, well, it's probably cheaper to do that than to refresh your devices, right? You know,
here's your battery case for your iPad. Yeah. Merry Christmas.
Yeah, sorry, it weighs as much as a laptop now. That's something I'm thinking about for our next lease, which is going to be 2016. Is do I in 2016 go for, the iPad Air 3? Let's call it that will be out then. Go for the top of the line iPad, but stretch the lease out to 4 years, because we've been buying the top of the line iPad up to now, so we're used to paying that. Or do we get something? Do we say we get the iPad Air 2 equivalent, next year, and then still stretch the lease out to 4 years? Maybe we do that, save ourselves a bit of money. It's not clear to me that the 3 years is the right number anymore. It might be, and I think there's still some developments that we need to see before we can really say that for sure. But it's something that I've never previously questioned that wisdom. I've always thought, well, 3 years is about the right time to refresh your iPad. But now I'm looking at these devices, I'm looking at the iPad Air still being around, I'm going, That's good for a while yet, that device. So, you know, 4 years on from the iPad Air, that might still be a pretty decent device.
We shall see.
We'll see. All right. Shall we wrap it up there?
Yeah, we'll do that. I hope everybody has a great week. And appreciate everybody listening. Thanks to our sponsors this week, Squarespace, Jemp Software, and iDev Books. All of the links we mentioned will be on outofschool.net. And this is show 108.
Yes. So I'm Fraser Spears on Twitter and spears.org on the web.
And I'm chambersdaily.com on the web and Bradley Chambers on Twitter. And I hope everybody has a great week.
Okay. See you next week.